Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. According to the Alzheimer's Disease International and Dementia Forecasting Collaborators, Alzheimer's disease is currently the most widespread and fatal neurodegenerative disorder among the elderly. Alzheimer's comprises 60 to 80% of all dementia cases, with a current estimate of 55 million worldwide, projected to grow to 153 million by 2050. While there is no cure for Alzheimer's disease, music therapy has been shown to benefit those living with Alzheimer's, both in cognition and behavioral function. Today, we talk about music therapy for those living with dementia and Alzheimer's, what the research tells us, and what musicians and caregivers experience working with individuals. And we discuss local supports and services for people living with Alzheimer's and their caregivers. Joining us here in Woods Hole is Molly Perdue, co-founder and executive director of the Alzheimer's Family Support Center. Welcome back. Always good to see you.
Hi, Mindy. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Also with us today, Dr. Michael Anderson, professor of musicology at Eastman School of Music. He helped establish the Encore Chorus for persons living with dementia and their care partners. He also serves on the National Advisory Council of the Giving Voice Initiative and has become a member of the University of Rochester Aging Institute. Hello, Michael. Nice to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Jim Jordan, organist, pianist, music theorist, composer, music editor. He's also a certified nursing assistant. He combines his artistic talents with his desire to provide care and comfort, working with residents in settings that range from hospice to memory care and rehabilitation. Welcome, Jim. Good to see you.
Thanks so much, Mindy. Really glad to be here.
All right. So, Molly, what is Alzheimer's and how is it different from dementia?
So, Mindy, dementia is an umbrella term, and there are something like 150 different patterns of dementia-related diseases. So Alzheimer's is the most common. It is what we're finding is as we become more sophisticated in our diagnoses, Alzheimer's is making up around 60% of cases of dementia, and we have different types that we're starting to be able to recognize and diagnose a little sooner.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what's happening in the brains with people with Alzheimer's, and there's different stages, right?
Yes. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways to stage dementia-related disease. What we try to do in our programming is we look at people that are early, people that are in more moderate stages, and then people that are in more severe stages. And looking at it that way can help you try to figure out what are the abilities? Because sometimes we always think in terms of disability, what a person can't do. And I think it's very important that we start thinking in not only what a person needs help with, and that's what we want to accommodate within all of our programs, but also what is their strength? And I think this topic of music is going to be so interesting because we know it's amazing what music can do in the lives of people that are living with cognitive loss in any stage.
Yeah. Do we know about how many Cape and Islanders are living with Alzheimer's disease?
So a lot of these are based on sample sizes, but we're thinking about 13,000 people. Somewhere around there in some stage of dementia, which means roughly there are two to three times as many caregivers that are trying to figure out how to provide the care in an ongoing way for all the people that are living with cognitive loss.
All right. So you just touched on this. But when did you discover that music helped make connections with people with Alzheimer's? And do we know why this?
Well, you've got some great professionals. We're going to get Michael to talk all about that, right? But I think I can tell you a personal story. My mother, who had dementia, is kind of the reason why we got the Alzheimer's Family Support Center started. She loved music. And I can remember a day where she was not very communicative. And I'm sure Michael can kind of explain all this to us. But we took her to a brunch. And When the Saints Go Marching In was being sung, and the singer marched over to her. She hadn't talked to us in a couple of days, very blank, not able really to express herself. She took that microphone and she belted out When the Saints Go Marching In. And Melanie and myself, who's also a co-founder of the Alzheimer's Family Support Center, we were a little stunned, but it was amazing. And you know, what I know is that people just seem to feel so good. So we bring a lot of music into all of our programs because we know it's so important for people that are living with cognitive loss and they have to figure out how they're going to get through every day. But the emotional impact of music is amazing.
Yeah. And Michael, I bet you have a lot of stories like Molly's telling, right?
I do. I mean, my personal start was pretty late, I have to say. It's just about 5 or 6 years ago. that I was involved in reporting on some cases of music organizations doing interesting things around the country. And I stumbled upon the Phoenix Symphony. I mean, quite far from where I am in Western New York, but I learned that they were sending out musicians to a long-term care facility for people with Alzheimer's in late stages. And these are people that had severe cognitive decline. Daily activities were a struggle, to say the least. There were many what they called stress events happening at this facility. Their elders falling, have trouble taking showers, any kind of thing like that. And when the musicians from the Phoenix Symphony came in to the facilities, say a couple days a week, they experienced a lot fewer of these stress events that it was almost certainly directly related to the music. And they took some videos and just showed how people just lit up, even some that were, non-communicative, standing up, taking someone's hand and dancing to music that had special meaning for them. And I think that's really the key, is music that has meaning. And it really awakens deep-seated positive memories almost always, and gets people up.
So describe when and why you established Encore Chorus, and tell us what the Encore Chorus is.
Well, it took a while, but I was desperate after seeing these results in Phoenix to I knew that they actually were running out of musicians. The program was so successful, and I kept thinking to myself, where I am in Rochester, we have a bit of an oversupply of musicians. We have a pretty well-known school of music, and just all kinds of graduates brimming around the edges of our city. I knew something like this would have to work, and nothing was set up to do so. And I was trying to do this through long-term care facilities and running into all kinds of liability issues about, how would we build this up? And finally, a colleague in San Francisco just said, do you have a chorus that of people with dementia? I said, I couldn't believe I hadn't thought of such a thing. Just not going to care facilities, but bringing people to a location. And so through the community music school that we have set up at the Eastman School of Music, this was a natural place for a project of this type to take place. So we do invite people with early to mid stage of dementia to attend our chorus with their caregivers. And that's been going for about 6 months now.
So how do the chorus members find their way to you? You say you invite them. How do you locate them?
Well, we have, their major hospital systems will have memory care divisions, and retirement communities often have memory care divisions now. I think that's really changed. So that's a direct path into these. But I will say, after attempting recruiting over the last year, it's very difficult because it's one thing to have a program that will probably work well. And many of these directors tell me, oh, we know so and so would be great for this, but it's the caregiver part that Molly was alluding to that is really an important piece of the puzzle. We require that the caregiver attend chorus with their loved one because it's not a daycare drop-off. It can't work that way. And even though we have volunteer support, they're not loved ones, they're not close to the ones affected. So that's the really important piece of the puzzle. And then we host these in the either late morning or midday, which is kind of when you have to do these based on the trajectory of the disease, how it works on a day-to-day basis. And that's hard for many people to break out at 1 o'clock in the afternoon with their caregiver, which is with how people work and such. If both aren't retired, you don't have a willing spouse or something like that, it's very hard. So, that's a work in progress.
We have an audio clip of the Encore Chorus performing Blueberry Hill. Anything you want to tell us before we take a listen? No? Okay, let's take a listen.
I could, but.
I found my thrill.
people are in the chorus? It sounds like it's a pretty good sized chorus.
It's about 40 people.
Wow.
When you think about the composition of the chorus, it turns into maybe something you have to think about a little bit more, because we have the people affected with dementia, their caregivers attend, are members of the chorus. They're fully fledged members. They should sing. They have to sing. And then we have a volunteer crew that we also ask to sing. So each couple, if you will, is paired up with a volunteer. So I always say it sounds better than it should, because we have volunteer support, and it really gets everyone into it, feeling like they're one voice. And you really can't tell who is who. And we don't have name tags that say like, oh, you're the caregiver, you're not, that kind of thing. There's no labels in this arrangement. So it's just everyone's together.
What feedback are you getting from the caregivers? I would imagine this is just as enjoyable for the caregivers as it is for the folks with Alzheimer's.
They are, they always come out better in the end. There was a new member that joined just a few weeks ago, and her husband had sung for many years, but he was now suffering from the disease and the diagnosis, but she was not a singer. And they were in the back row, and this was their first time. And they looked at me and she said, "Do I have to sing too?" And I said, "Well, we would like you to. We give you a binder to with all the music. If you can't read music, we have just the words for you." And she came out of that just, she had a volunteer next to her who's singing. It's hard not to want to join in, especially when it's songs that are familiar and such.
Yeah.
And I remember after that rehearsal, she turned to her husband and she said, "It's so nice to hear you singing again." So to me, even if she's not 100% in singing, that meant a lot to her to see her loved one singing.
All right, Jim, describe how you use music therapy with older adults and those living with Alzheimer's and other dementia.
Absolutely. I just want to stand up and scream in happiness listening to these stories, because I've played for nursing centers since I was 13. And of course, at that point in time, what did a young teenager know what to call anything? All I could see were the looks on responses. But a couple of stories, which I think I can tell you right off. One, I had a particular resident at one point in one of the facilities where I worked here on the Cape. I'll put it this way. She had no interest in having a caregiver at all. I mean, she simply didn't want anybody in the room. She was new to the facility, and her Alzheimer's had progressed quite far by that point. She was a sweet lady to look at, but could be difficult to work with. Anyway, a friend of mine who was also an aide, he knew that I knew all of these old hymns off by heart. And he said, "Jim, just go in the minute you start opening the door and sing the entire time." Well, so the last time I'd been in there, I left quickly. So I thought, well, I'll try this. And I did. Her face melted. Her eyes. I'll never forget the look on her face. We were able to get her ready for bed. She even let me help her brush her teeth while she was singing. I mean, I thought, how is this going to work? She crawled over into the bed. We ended up with "Jesus Loves Me," and I basically said goodnight, and I walked out of that room, and it proved something to me that I had seen in different settings. But that particular one I found quite touching. The other one, when I first became an aide, I was one of the caregivers for a lady who at that time was 102.
Wow.
And that was the oldest person I had worked with at that point. And again, she did not care to be in this place. So this was a difficulty for her. Blind, largely deaf, and memory not good. And we would just, there were verbal things back and forth all the time and difficulties. Finally, one night, this is when I used to do the overnight shift full time. I happened to notice, and this was in the days of cassette players, and I noticed a cassette player next to her bed. I said, "Well, why don't you put this on over here?" Well, good. I like music. All right, so we put it on. She fell asleep. I happened to be on the 3 to 11 shift the next day after this overnight. And I said, "You really like music, don't you?" "Well, yes. I was married to a famous organist, bingo. And I caught on to that being an organist. And we started talking. And she had been at the premiere of Rhapsody in Blue with Paul Whiteman Orchestra and with Gershwin playing. And we became fast friends. Her memory clicked back in.
I think Jim
I
froze
would
there.
play things for her when I would go out, and I was the caregiver on that particular way. Can you hear me now? Hello?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Great. We became fast friends, and in the end, a few years later, I was one of three organists who played for her funeral service, including the director of medicine at that particular center. We were having a good laugh over the fact that we'd both known her through caregiving and through music, but I was so touched by the change in that relationship and her memory. She and I were it, totally, she was cognizant of everything, absolutely cognizant of everything. And after we had that time.
Yeah, the power of music, huh? We're talking about music therapy for those living with dementia and Alzheimer's. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, excuse me, is thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about music therapy for those living with dementia and Alzheimer's, what the research tells us, and what musicians and caregivers experience working with individuals. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you'd like to join our conversation, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us is Molly Perdue, co-founder and executive director of the Alzheimer's Family Support Center, Dr. Michael Anderson, professor of musicology at Eastman School of Music. He helped establish the Encore Chorus for persons living with dementia and their care partners. Jim Jordan's an organist, pianist, music theorist, composer, music editor. He's also a certified nursing assistant. All right, so Michael, you mentioned music that's important to you. So it's not just any music, right? I mean, this when you're working with folks with dementia.
Right. Research shows that the most powerful musical memory that you have can be tapped by looking at what you were listening to around the age of 18 or so. And so just do the math, and think about what kind of songs were popular at that time that you would have been exposed to or that you had attachment to. Those are with us most strongly as we age. And so in our chorus, no surprise, we are looking at music largely from the late 50s, from the early 1960s or so, which kind of hits the balance of the ages of our elders that are with us. And they absolutely light up. Yesterday we played some music of Jerry Vale. "Let It Be Me" was the song. And we were having people do a little dance when they heard a certain artist, whether it was Elvis or the Everly Brothers or whatever. And this one woman, she stood up and said, "Jerry Vale's my boyfriend." and, a generally a stoic person in the chorus, just the smile on her face just lit up, and we got to hear about her crush. If that doesn't tell you
Right.
how this works.
And Jim, you brought some music to share. The first piece will likely be familiar to many listeners. It's from The Sound of Music. Why this piece?
Well, this ties directly into something I've done for many years, and that is play at these skilled nursing facilities on Thanksgiving Day and on Christmas Day. I happen to be good friends with a director of activities and then a further director of an assisted living, as well as the nursing, because she said to me one point that those were the days that were the most difficult. And especially for the memory care units, because the memories are so powerful at the holiday time. And so I picked this piece just because what would happen is all these residents would come out and circle around the piano. And noisy, my goodness, they were noisy. And talking to the minute, I always played this piece on Christmas Day. And they became like what Michael is describing as this encore choir. The aides and the residents all dive bombed in to sing this piece.
All right, let's give a listen.
Doe, a deer, a female deer. Ray, a drop of golden sun. Me, a name I call myself. Far, a long, long way to run. So, a needle pulling thread. La, a note to follow so. Tea, a drink with jam and bread. That will bring us back to dough.
I can see everybody around the piano there with you, Jim, singing along.
I want to dovetail back in. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Jim.
I just want to dovetail back in on something Michael was talking about, the age of impression, as it were, with the music, because I grew up in a home with older parents. My folks are both passed away now, but they would have been 98 and 97 years old now. And listen to that kind of music. And this is the age of the folks that often I happen to play for. And the minute that style of music comes out, that's from their younger days like mm-hmm. that, they are what I would call renewed people.
Yeah,
they are not that person who is unable or seemingly disconnected. They reconnect instantly.
Yeah. Molly, goes back to what you were saying, too, about ability versus disability, right? And we have they've got this ability to remember this song and sing along. And even if it's just a few minutes, that joy that it brings them, it's amazing.
Well, you know, we know there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of anxiety that comes with someone losing their cognition. And one of the things that we've watched music do is help them kind of cross that threshold into the room where the music's being provided and be able to let go of that and join mm-hmm. and go back to that stage of when they were younger. It's interesting to hear that around 18 is where you really provide that musical memory. But we've watched people scared to enter a musical concert that we were putting on, but we would help them slowly get in the room. And the caregiver didn't know how to deal with the anxiety and the frustration. And once we helped them cross that threshold and once the music started, they were able to kind of let go and really enjoy. And I think a lot of music allows us to educate family caregivers on how to get their people to join. And when you do that, then you are dealing with ability. When you do that, you've crossed over and you've removed the disability, which can be, I don't know what's going to happen if I walk in that door and I'm scared because it's really hard to understand what's going to happen there. And when I was hearing Michael talk about the caregivers back mm-hmm. Earlier in the conversation, I was thinking this is part of what we try to do, to keep that focus and to help caregivers develop their abilities.
Yeah. Let's talk to Mary, who's giving us a call. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi, yeah, go ahead, Mary.
Yes, it's Mary Chris. I'm calling because I love this program, and I absolutely, as a home health aide for over 33 years, in homes, and I've been in facilities, I would say that music has been the key to getting through to many, many dementia patients and getting them to feel comfortable. And going back to the days when they could remember the song, excuse me, just a second, I get a check the radio here. Anyway, and what Jim said about that woman with the hymns mm-hmm. just struck home right away. Because I remember going into a facility and someone said, oh, you'll never get her to take a bath. Never. We can't get her to take a bath. And so I said, all right, okay. And it was definitely divine inspiration. I started singing Amazing Grace. And not only did she join me, but she knew all the lyrics. And the visit went like a song. Yeah. It was great, so to say, you know. But music is definitely the key. Let me call you sweetheart. You are my sunshine. In fact, my parents were born in 1904, 1909. So I grew up with a lot of the different songs and nursery rhyme songs, too.
Yeah.
Because you see the faces light up. Oh, I do remember that. Oh, yeah. So, you know, definitely Bo Dear was a big one. And these are musicals, but music is the key. As long as you find the ones that they like.
I was going to ask that question. Yeah. Yes. Mary, thank you. Thank you for sharing with us, Mary. We appreciate that. Does finding music familiar to everyone in the group present challenges, or are able to find works that many people are familiar with? Yeah, go ahead, Michael. Yeah.
Well, I think the it raises an important question, which is that we can hardly agree on what we think is the best music. Maybe we're lucky in a way right now that if we're tapping into memories of people when they're 18 or something, the media landscape was such that we weren't, we had a top 100, top 40, mm-hmm. right, available to us, which people more or less coalesced around. Generally, but there are other traditions that people grow up with, even going back, of course, to the 50s and much earlier, that are meaningful, but that, if you bring them out in a large choir format, you get some disagreement about, what's great. I can think of one couple that's in the encore chorus that made a comment that, this music, we're a bit younger than the people here. We'd love a little bit more rock and roll. And so we try to integrate that a little bit, but at some point you can't have a little sampler of everything, because then almost, I don't want to say no one comes out liking it, but it can be, it's difficult. Yeah. But I would like to add too that we don't, talking about what Molly said about trying to tap into things we can do, we can do more than just remember songs from the late 50s. We can also show you, people with dementia can show you what they can do now. And so introducing new material is part of our mission as well. So not all music is just familiar, mm-hmm. quote unquote, familiar music, but we're trying to teach new skills, and we can, and even as simple as improvisation would be something that we could do to get people going, get the juices flowing, show us what you can do independent of your memories from long ago.
Yeah.
Michael, we ran a program early on when we just started the Alzheimer's Family Support Center in Eastham, where we had the school send their fourth and fifth graders. Nauset Public Schools sent their kids. And we had a person that ran the chorus that was able to bring new songs to the people that were in the day program and were coming in from the community that had cognitive loss. And so the children became the teachers. So they would teach the new songs, and the older people would teach the kids some of their songs. And we had such a ball. Usually the session would end in dancing, where everybody was having so much fun. And I think you're completely correct. The important part that I noticed was that the emotional piece is so big with music that people can cross boundaries that they never thought that they could otherwise.
Yeah. For someone listening, Michael, who might be interested in starting a chorus for people with dementia, how does one get started?
Well, I'm fully aware that most towns and cities across the country do not have a local community music school with hundreds of courses, as we fortunately have in Rochester, New York. But lucky for everyone, an organization called Giving Voice, which is run out of the Twin Cities, is an organization that has five of these choirs going already, which is kind of amazing. And they are, for my money, the epicenter of the movement here. And they have taken it a step further just recently and kind of opened up the whole idea and want to promote this around the world. So it's called the Giving Voice Initiative. And they offer a toolkit, if you can believe it, a little packet that just explains, like, from nothing, how can you start one of these things? What kind of people do you need? Do you need funding? How will it work in your town? And, you know, soup to nuts, giving you everything you need. So that was a major boost, even though we had some infrastructure where I live. You could really start this from scratch.
Molly, you have an office now in the mall, right? And you tell me you have a grand piano there, right?
So I want to invite Michael to come from Rochester and Jim, who's only coming from Orleans, to the Cape Cod Mall. We just moved in last week. So this is a brand new space across from a children's play area, guys, and Mindy. So we're really excited to kind of, we just got the piano tuned. And I'm definitely going to pick their brain about how we could possibly get a chorus started right there at the Cape Cod Mall.
Yeah. I mean, that draws everybody.
Molly, I was just there 2 weeks ago. I know exactly where you are.
Right?
Absolutely. Oh, I can spot it because I walked through the children's play area on purpose.
Yeah. So, all right. So get somebody playing that
piano. Yeah, it's taking a little while to get our sign up. So you just have to kind of surmise that must be the center. But, you know, the concept of a community center that brings people in and has people find their joy when they're going through cognitive loss is so important.
Right. We are talking.
You know, I love the thing, though, you said about the dancing at the end, because we would often do that. Also, one thing when we'd have the sing-alongs at the activities was storytelling related to the pieces. People would actually bring up their memories associated with these songs, and they could tell it to the group. I could tell stories myself from my folks or even my sisters, and it just added another layer to their memories coming to life again.
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions, Jim, I was going to ask, is that we hear about people who are able to access memories after listening to music and even talk about their experiences. And so you're giving us a good example of that. Michael, do you find that with your chorus that you know, as they're singing these songs, memories are coming back to them that they may have lost?
Well, I'll first say that part of the giving voice model is to they flag this issue, you know, that most people have some kind of thing they can relate to from the song that's being sung, even if it's in the most generic sense. But what we do in the encore chorus is we carve out about a half an hour out of our rehearsal for pure social time. And that really develops ideas that sometimes are inspired by the music. We kind of sometimes we'll have some prompt questions that relate to the various topics in the music, but it also, to go back to a previous point, becomes kind of a caregiver support network. And people can relate to each other, even if, you know, as conversations go, they veer off topic and we're no longer talking about Blueberry Hill, but we're talking about someone who was a swimmer long ago. And we learn about each other that way. So that's an important part of the giving voice model that I think is crucial, is the social component.
You know, can I throw in on that real quick? Because what you just said, Michael, is so crucial. And a lot of us who have worked in the caregiving field are finding this is a great way to actually discover who the people are that we're caring about. And that makes a difference, a huge difference in the relationship between the caregiver and the person receiving the care. And that pathway is often music. At least that's been my personal discovery. And what you find out about those people then connects back in, Mindy, with what you're saying of their memories coming to life. But it also opens the door for conversations appropriate to today and what they're actually thinking. I've watched that so many times after one of these sessions that it almost seems that the memory issues evaporate for some period of time.
You know, Jim, I think we're social creatures, and sometimes we forget that because we underestimate when people have cognitive loss, that connection, that social engagement piece is so important to all of us, just as human beings alive on this planet.
We're talking about music therapy for those living with dementia and Alzheimer's. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about music therapy for those living with dementia and Alzheimer's with Molly Perdue, co-founder and executive director of the Alzheimer's Family Support Center, Dr. Michael Anderson, professor of musicology at Eastman School of Music. He helped establish the Encore Chorus for persons living with dementia and their care partners. Jim Jordan is an organist, pianist, music theorist. He's also a certified nursing assistant. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. 4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So, Molly, for those who don't know someone living with Alzheimer's, music therapy might seem kind of insignificant in light of the many challenges the disease brings. Explain a little bit why therapies like music and some of the other therapies that really you are seeing making a difference for these folks.
So we just touched on it, and that is our social connection. Because we know that when we socialize, we feel better. We're able to reduce some of our rates of depression and anxiety. What we learned from the COVID pandemic was that isolation is really bad for everyone. So bringing people together and continuing a socialization for people that are living with cognitive loss can be really important, because the one thing that we know as you go through a cognitive decline is that you're going to have to depend on some people to help you. And so if we foster those connections early on using things like music, we're able to help people through their entire path be able to foster healthy and positive connections.
Yeah. And it goes back to that fear thing. I mean, you can imagine the fear that people are feeling, and to be able to, you know, experience that socialization and that joy of the music without the fear is huge.
Yeah, Arthur Greg O'Brien talks a lot about depending. He has Alzheimer's, and he talks a lot about depending on his cognition to feel okay in social situations. And when you lose your cognition, you can't rely on it in the same way. It can be very frightening and scary. So helping people with that emotional connection to programs like music therapy help them feel better. And I think if we are going to help people as they move through a disease process that can go anywhere from 2 to 20 years, if we can help them feel okay, or as okay as we can while they're moving through it, I think that's really important.
Yeah. Jim, we have another cut of music that you brought. This one is Jesus Loves Me. And I think the story with this you told earlier, this was the woman who wanted nothing to do with anybody in her room, right?
Well, and she was certainly one of them. But I'll tell you where I really discovered something, two places about Jesus Loves Me. For one thing, being a children's hymn, when I would do organ demonstrations, oftentimes we would have activities directors who are actually bringing memory care units to the organ demonstrations. And I would complete the organ demonstration with Jesus Loves Me, an improvisation on Jesus Loves Me. And to that moment, I had my back to them the first time I ever did this. And they were fairly talkative and, you know, noisy. And the minute they recognized that piece, it was, you could hear a pin drop in the room. And I turned around. I always ask at the end of an organ demonstration, how did that make you feel? And all I had were tears in eyes.
Aww.
And I thought, you know, so what I've done is I actually take that piece and I generally close what I'm doing from any kind of nursing center, I'll close out with some kind of improvisation on both Jesus Loves Me and Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Because both, well, they have similar harmonic patterns and make all that work together in different styles. But what always amazed me about doing this is we've been talking about the fear in the faces. And the fear, I'd watch that fear drain out of their face.
Yeah.
It would disappear because the strength of the emotion tied to the memory of those sounds became so present in their being, you just couldn't argue with it.
Right.
So that's why I use that.
Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
right, Jim, you're not singing when you do this, right? You're just playing this and it takes them a minute to kind of go, oh, wait, I know this.
Actually, I do both.
You do both. Okay.
I do both. Sometimes I will sing, and then when I get tired of singing, I'll tell them they have to, and then they have to, and we'll go back and forth. But there's one thing about this. It's a bit of a side, but I want to just throw it in. For anybody who doesn't know this book by Andrew Shulman called Waking the Spirit, it ties very much to this kind of concept where that music speaks to an emotion and slips under the mind. Mm. And moves back up into it. And I think this is really crucial with the music, because I was thinking as we were talking earlier about the various kinds of music that do, you know, what speaks to a given person. I generally go out and play on some kind of a themed day. But if it's Christmas and I know that there are people of Jewish faith, I will bring out a dreidel song or something of that nature so I can actually tie that in. But Thanksgiving, July 4th, there's a certain expectation that they all have, which I find actually they pretty much all join into, even if they don't know all the songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Molly, Alzheimer's disease, of course, takes a toll not just on the individuals who've been diagnosed with it, but their families and caregivers. And we probably can't talk enough about caregivers have to take care of themselves. Talk about some of the supports offered through Alzheimer's Family Support.
So we wrap around every caregiver and every person living with cognitive loss all sorts of different programming, such as social engagement. We invite people to the mall to come. It's a drop-off program. We bring in artists. We do all sorts of activities. We go across and we go bowling. We do numerous things that people that are living with cognitive loss can have that social engagement. We have support groups. We do a lot of education. We have caregiver education that will kind of provide a framework for going through the disease process. We have them online. We have them in person. We have them all around the Cape. We also have things like we're doing a walk in Provincetown October 13th. We are going to have a band.
10th annual, right?
Yeah, we can do respite. We have free food, free T-shirts, free music, lots of dancing. Mm-hmm. Everybody's invited. You don't have to fundraise to come. So we try to just find ways to get into our community and make it as easy as possible for people to connect to services, whether it's by phone or it's in person. We want to be there, and we will meet you where you're at, whether you're living with cognitive loss or you're a caregiver that needs some support.
Yeah, and we should mention most of these programs are free, right?
All of them.
Everything
is free.
All is free. That's a good thing to know. Okay, we're seeing more research come out in support of the positive benefits of music therapy, backing up what we've kind of known anecdotally for a long time. Talk about why peer-reviewed research is so important to back up what we know anecdotally. Anybody can answer or chime in on that. Molly?
So I think it's great for us to keep looking at what is going to help people as they live, living with. And music therapy is one of those things. It's so easy to forget how much time and space caregivers are trying to figure out how to help people stay connected and stay happy, and how many years, if you're living with cognitive loss, that you want to spend enjoying the rest of your life. And music therapy is one of those things, and I think it's critical to well-being. It's critical to social connection. And so having people be able to contact peer-reviewed articles that are looking at this, that then can create funding streams, because, you know, these programs, if we can get them in every community across the U.S., that would be great. And so that's what research starts to build.
Yeah. Michael, what if you talk a little bit about the families and caregivers who are taking part in this, in your Encore chorus? Talk a little bit about what you see, especially as time goes on. You know, you're doing these different, like there's that you mentioned somebody the first time they come. What is it like the sixth or seventh or tenth time they come? Are you seeing any changes in them?
Well, it's hard to really quantify that, but you know, so these are qualitative observations. But of course, people develop a comfort with routine, and when we have a weekly rehearsal, same time, same place. No windows, no distractions, just music and your loved one. You know, you can guess, we're seeing very happy people. And I will try to back that up by saying that not only are we at a school of music based in Rochester, but we are connected through the University of Rochester to a world-class medical research center. So we have our School of Nursing at work doing surveys behind the scenes, and they're especially interested in caregiver well-being. And so the pre and post surveys that we're attempting to do are really focused on the caregiver, because I think they recognized how crucial they are to the health and well-being of our participants. So that is really where their focus is, interestingly. We're not hooking people up to, you know, head caps and throwing them in machines, but we're at this stage very interested in how the caregivers are faring through a program like this.
It's important, yeah. The caregivers' care is very important. Research into diagnosis and treatment of Alzheimer's is progressing, perhaps not as quickly as we would all like. I'm wondering if any of you have an eye on research or studies that you're hopeful will get us closer to some sort of treatment or cure. And Molly, I know that's something you kind of keep an eye on, right? Are you optimistic?
Yes, I think we're making amazing discoveries. And I love to hear that School of Medicine in Rochester is looking at this, you know. I think it's so important that we keep gathering research on caregiver well-being, on what these programs do to reduce the stress and the anxiety, not only in the person living with disease, but the caregiver. You know, what we do with some of our programming is we do a very modest, how do you feel before the program? How do you feel after? To try to capture that, because it's so hard to capture efficacy of programs with people that are living with cognitive loss, because it has to be immediate. Mm-hmm. But I think it's great work that Michael's doing, and I'm so excited to hear about all these things.
Yeah, well, stay tuned. So Molly Perdue, co-founder and executive director of the Alzheimer's Family Support Center. Dr. Michael Anderson is professor of musicology at Eastman School of Music. He helped establish the Encore Chorus for persons living with dementia and their care partners. And Jim Jordan is organist, pianist, music theorist, composer, and music editor, who's also a certified nursing assistant. We'll have a link with more information about the organizations we talked to today at our website, capeandislands.com. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for the work that you do. Very important. Thanks.
Thanks, Mindy.
Thanks for having us on.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.